All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. I hope you all had a fantastic weekend. Happy Monday, everybody. Today's October 13th, 2025. And the top story this morning, it's my favorite top story in the whole wide world. Precious metals are ripping once again. We've got gold briefly broke above $4,100, a new all-time high. The first time ever we've hit that level. And guys, let me just tell you, I do not think this is a top. Over the weekend, I was hanging out with a buddy of mine, having a couple of beers. He manages money for churches and nonprofits. He manages endowments, things like that. And I was asking him, I said, hey, you know, are any of your clients calling you asking about gold? I told him about the stories about Ray Dalio and Jeff Gundlach over the last couple of weeks talking about 15 and even 25% allocations into gold because of negative real yields. And he says, no. Nobody's asking him about gold. Everybody he talks to, it's still the same story that it's been for years. Machine learning and AI. That's the only thing anybody ever asked him about. Nobody's asking about gold. And that tells me that this story is nowhere near saturation yet, that this big migration or reallocation of money out of bonds and into gold has not even begun. And if it is begun, it's in the very early stages. I mean, think about how much money, if the traditional 60-40 portfolio, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, were to suddenly start migrating to something resembling more like a 60-20-20 with 20% being allocated to precious metals, that is trillions of dollars flowing into a very small precious metals market. And there's really no telling how high prices go if that happens. And the fact that his clients are still only asking about freaking AI tells me that is very early on. It hasn't even started yet. And maybe that's why Bank of America is out with a note this morning, raising their price targets for both metals. We've got a $5,000 price target for gold and a $65 price target for BOFA or for silver. Now, this note is warning about the possibility of a pullback, but they're also talking about a state of seizure in London as it pertains to the silver market. And I got to send a shout out to Bob Coleman. He's a frequent guest on this channel. He did an impromptu live stream over on my over here on Thursday last week to talk about what was going on in London. Bob has been way ahead of this story. If you're not following Bob on Twitter at Profits Plus ID, I don't know what you're waiting for. You should be following him. There is a state of dysfunction in London. It's continuing this morning. The ETFs are gobbling up all of the available physical metal that's available at the LBMA, which is the biggest silver vault in the world. There just isn't enough metal to go around for the demand. We've got retail traders are starting, emphasis, they are starting to pile into these paper silver derivative products like the silver ETF. And those ETFs start to trade at a premium to net asset value. As they do that, they issue more shares to bring that premium back down. Those new shares then need to go buy new metal in order to balance out the net asset value. The ETFs have gobbled up everything, and there's just not enough. And so London is broken down. We saw that huge arbitrage open up last week with London metal was trading as much as $3 over New York metal. Now, over the weekend, there were stories in Bloomberg about planes being loaded with silver bars in New York flying across the pond to try to alleviate that shortage. We're seeing the effect of that this morning. We've got the New York price is rising much faster, playing catch up to that London spot price, although there's still a big arbitrage opportunity. But I wonder how effective will that be? Silver's very heavy, right? I mean, you can only fit so much silver in the belly of a plane. And if you're trying to capture a dollar or two, maybe $3 worth of arbitrage, 747 costs a lot of money to fly across the plane. You got to have security there, the labor to move the metal around. I'm just not sure how effective that moving metal across the pond is really going to be in closing that gap. But it is causing problems, guys. Lease rates in London are still astronomically high. The cost to borrow shares of SLV, something like 14% this morning, still very little shares available. Metal's got room to run here. And as always, I like the shiny. Also going on this morning, we've got the taco trade is back, or at least that's what the market is telling us. The market smells taco. Of course, taco is the liberal media acronym for Trump always chickens out because, you know, orange man bad, all that. Yeah, I get it. We had the threat of 100% tariffs on China over the weekend. It caused havoc. You know, the escalation in the trade war took down the Dow and the NASDAQ, I think almost 800 points on Friday. It was a big sell-off. Crypto got absolutely bludgeoned. I did a video about that yesterday, by the way, if you want to learn more about what happened in crypto. And then there was some softened rhetoric over the weekend. You know, President Trump basically left the door open to negotiations. And it seems like the market is betting here that both Xi Jinping and Trump are just doing some economic saber rattling, trying to kind of jockey for position ahead of this summit at the end of this month. And the market is saying everything is going to be fine here. And maybe they're right. But then again, maybe these guys are volatile, unpredictable egomaniacs, and they're going to make a freaking mess of everything. And the market is really not accurately gauging the risk of that, in my opinion. Either way, people are buying the dip this morning. Stocks have recovered about half of their losses from Friday. Crypto is back up as well. Again, recovering a chunk of the losses, not quite half there. But the market is saying, hey, Taco, that is the bet. Now, even as that's going on, we've got the Netherlands is opening up another front in the trade war this morning. The Dutch government has taken control of Nexperia. That's a Chinese-owned chip maker based in the Netherlands. And the Dutch government just took it from the Chinese. It's ours now. We're in charge. We're appointing people to run it. They're worried about domestic supply of chips. I can't imagine the Chinese are going to be very happy about that. This is probably in retaliation for some of the restrictions on rare earths. Now, look, the U.S. and Europe, we've got our own tit for tat going in the trade war here, obviously, right? Ursula and the Donald and their big, beautiful deals and everything they're trying to get done. But China is fighting a two-front war when it comes to trade right now. The Europeans have put some big tariffs on those Chinese electric vehicles. Now we've got this Dutch seizure of Nexperia. Of course, China's also got the trade war with the United States going on. The world is getting a lot bigger right now, guys. We are deglobalizing. Everybody's kind of siloing up here. I don't know what the fallout from this Dutch story is, but that bears watching. The Chinese will almost certainly retaliate. Now, China has their own problems. We've got China Vanke. That is the near-bankrupt developer that's now essentially state-owned. Their chairman has abruptly resigned for personal reasons, naturally, after less than a year on the job. Now, Vanke is hopelessly in debt, much like Evergrande and Country Garden, who have already filed for bankruptcy. They're hopelessly in debt. They're still losing money, and they've already been nationalized. It's going to end up bailed out. The Chinese government is avoiding it. But it's just a reminder, guys, that the ongoing collapse of the China real estate market, which is a huge segment of China's GDP, that is an ongoing risk. And, you know, China likes to play tough and, you know, the paper dragon thing. And, you know, they always puff up their chest. Oh, I'm big, bad China. I take over world. Yeah, your economy is in a state of free fall right now. It's collapsing. You can stop reporting your youth unemployment. You can try to prop up your defunct builders. But China has real problems on its hand, and it cannot afford this trade war any more than we can. We've got our own problems, commercial real estate, AI bubble, private equity. Take your pick. So that's going on this morning. We've got President Trump is threatening to send Tomahawks to Ukraine. This is an interesting story. But first, he wants to give President Putin another chance to end the war. Now, this is a very real threat here. Tomahawk missiles have a very long range, and they pack a very big punch. And there's also a story this morning about Russian fuel exports being down 17% in September after Ukrainian drone strikes on Russian refineries. Now, if the Ukrainians can tank Russian fuel exports with drones, what do you think they can do with Tomahawk missiles? Russians should take that threat seriously. And again, the U.S., you know, we're using the Ukraine war as a chance to turn over our old stockpile of missiles and test new launch platforms and then use the money we sell these missiles to the Ukrainians for to buy more modern equipments like the JASSM and the LRASM, which are the replacements for the Tomahawks. Defense names probably looking pretty good here as the world marches face first into World War III. We've got auditor BDO is cutting jobs after one of their biggest clients, First Brands, went bankrupt. BDO, that's an auditor that we've mentioned on this channel. They're involved with a company that I've spent a lot of time covering here. Stick around for that one. And junk bonds on Friday had one of the biggest beatings they've seen in months on the sell-off that was driven by that tariff threat. Guys, keep an eye on the bond market. There is a lot of complacency, especially in the junk bond market. Yield spreads are very tight right now. People are overpaying for risk. And well, I guess we're just going to have to wait because the bond market is closed today. It's Columbus Day. Stocks are open. Bonds are closed. Post office is closed. Banks are mostly closed. Some might be open. Schools, some are open, some are closed. It's kind of a funny day. But we've got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon ahead of the head? Let's shrink my big melon ahead and see what's going on in the world of finance today, shall we? Hey, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come on back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every single day. And right now, the S&P 500 is up about 85 points or 1.3% higher, clawing back some of those losses from Friday, although off the highs of the morning. The Dow is up 413 points or 0.91% higher, again, trying to recover from Friday. And the NASDAQ leading the way higher, up 454 points, 1.88% higher for the tech-heavy NASDAQ. Stocks are ripping on the taco trade this morning. Meanwhile, the U.S. dollar is stronger again, 99.24. That's up another 26 basis points. The weaker euro and the weaker yen propelling the dollar here. That's been about a week straight now. We've seen the dollar strengthen, although it's still below 100. Bond market, we're going to skip over the bond market this morning because it ain't moving. You see all these 10-10s here? Bond market's closed for Columbus Day. So why don't we just skip that and move right on to Bitcoin. $114,400 is priced on Coinbase. Bitcoin has recovered from a sell-off as low as $102,000 on Friday. Let's not go too deep into this. I will reiterate my warnings about leverage in Bitcoin, as I have done every day for several weeks, even months now. And I'll just leave you with this one, guys. When the stream is over, I did a video yesterday about the sell-off on Friday and how I think there is a very good chance that this is the onset of crypto winter, which is why I have been warning about leverage for so long. We saw $19 billion of levered bets wiped out in the span of just a few hours on Friday. Be careful, guys. Check out that video just as soon as the stream is over. And looking over at the commodities board, just look at those metals this morning. We have got December gold futures, $4,108 for that front month December contract. That's up $107 or 2.7% higher this morning. Gold just keeps on going. And again, I mentioned, in guys, that conversation I had over the weekend, the mainstream, they're just getting started with gold. If we're really at the beginning of a major reallocation from bonds into gold, then even $4,000 is a low price here. We could go a hell of a lot higher. I know this feels toppy. I know we've seen gold double, and that's not supposed to happen. But guys, if the market listens to guys like Gundlach and guys like Dalio, as it often does, and there is a lot of money that is going to be trying to squeeze into the tiny little room that is the gold market. Spot gold, meanwhile, $4,088. That is an all-time high as well, up $70 or 1.75%. Silver's looking even better this morning. Let's start with spot silver, $51.70. The price in London, that's up another $1.40, 2.79%. But look at the big move this morning in the December COMEX futures. That front month contract, $49.95, up $2.70. 5.7% higher for COMEX silver this morning. That is your planes being loaded with metal in New York and flying over to London to try to alleviate the shortage. Now, you are seeing that pull the New York price higher, but look, the London price is still dragging higher too. So even though we are seeing that metal move across the pond, the London price is still up 2.8% this morning, which means it's not enough to stop it. Silver's got room to run here. I like the shiny. Meanwhile, copper is up big this morning, 4.9% higher for copper. Platinum and palladium are getting in on it too. All the metals looking great here. $54 higher for January platinum futures, up by 3.3% to $1,677. Palladium says, hold my beer, up 2.2%, $32 higher for palladium over $1,500. Anything shiny is just looking really good this morning. Doesn't matter the color. An interesting thing on oil, even though oil is up here 64 cents, 1% higher for November WTI futures, we've got a 59 handle on that oil price here. That is interesting. Cheap oil, expensive metal, rocket fuel for mining companies here, guys. Congratulations to any of you guys that are sitting in miners. I know there's a lot of you following this channel. Meanwhile, here's the story we got in Bloomberg. Silver roars higher as short squeeze rocks the London market. Silver hit the highest in decades as a historic short squeeze in London intensified with a fresh surge in prices, adding urgency to a worldwide hunt for bullion that could alleviate the mismatch between demand and supply. Spot silver climbed as much as 3.1% to near $52 an ounce, exceeding last week's peak, while gold surpassed 4,070 an ounce. This story's a few hours old, obviously. Building on a record-breaking run of 8 weekly gains, platinum and palladium also surged amid signs that market stresses caused by surging investor demand are starting to spread to other precious metals. Concerns about a lack of liquidity in London drove silver closer to $52.50 an ounce. That's a record from 1980, set on the now-defunct contract on the Chicago Board of Trade Exchange. Benchmark prices in London have soared to near unprecedented levels over New York, prompting some traders to book cargo slots on transatlantic flights for silver bars, an expensive mode of transport typically reserved for gold, to profit off the massive premiums in London. Traders also remain on edge ahead of the conclusion of the U.S. administration's so-called Section 232 probe into critical minerals, which includes silver as well as platinum and palladium. Fears the metals could be swept up in new levies have exacerbated market tightness, partly laying the foundation for the squeeze in silver after a major drawdown of freely available supplies in London. That's a reminder there, guys, that 232 probe, that's like a national security investigation. Should we put tariffs on critical minerals? And remember, they snuck silver onto that critical minerals list. So we still could end up with tariffs on silver? Probably not, but we could. And if they end up putting tariffs on silver, guys, I don't know what to tell you. All that metal that's being put on planes right now, if they're going to put it back on the plane and bring it right back here if they do that. So, you know, as much as the market is messy right now, it could get messier. That's probably why Bank of America now sees $65 silver as the price spike reduces London market to a state of seizure. This is some 2021 language we're seeing here, guys, a state of seizure in London. Despite rallying by two-thirds in 2025, the price spike in silver shows no sign of abating and, if anything, seems to set to become even more extreme, say analysts. As prices climb Monday, Bank of America's global commodity team on Monday published a bullish outlook for precious metals and stuck a $65 per ounce price target on silver for 2026. While they acknowledge a short-term correction is plausible, and physical demand may decline 11% in 2026, lead analyst Michael Widmer still anticipates a physical deficit that justifies his forecast of a 30% rally. With physical demand exceeding supply and rates to borrow silver surging beyond 100%, what? The only resolution to the present squeeze is higher prices, allowing the market to clear, wrote precious metal analyst David Jensen in a Substack post over the weekend. Now, this is news to me, guys. They're talking about silver, the rates to borrow silver surging beyond 100%. I saw 20% lease rates in London last week. 100% is news to me. If that's accurate, then holy shit, even I have no idea how severe this shortage in London really is. And I've been talking about it quite a bit here. Jensen said the LBMA, the world's most important trading hub for silver, is effectively having a seizure and has been reduced to a state of lockup because there is not enough physical silver deliverable into the billions of dollars of spot contracts that have been entered into. The London market has ruptured to the point of dysfunctionality because the free float of silver is too small to accommodate demand at present. The gold to silver ratio at present is 81 times. Hansen reckons the 20-year average is more like 70, supporting the argument that silver has further upside. And guys, that thing there, I highlighted that last sentence because as much as people want to call a top, as people are having flashbacks to 2011 and 1980, the gold to silver ratio, the value of silver relative to gold, it is apples to orange comparison to those previous $50 highs that we saw in other silver markets where the gold to silver ratio was more like 15 or 31. Now it's 81. Silver is still cheap. Even at $50, it's still cheap. That's the crazy thing about this rally. Meanwhile, buy the dip call gets louder. as China's sell-off is seen as limited. This market is just like double dog daring you to start that trade war. Chinese markets displayed surprising resilience in the face of escalating trade tensions, underscoring how investors have grown accustomed to tit-for-tat salvos between Washington and Beijing. While President Trump floated an additional 100% tariffs on China, a deja vu of April threats that sent markets into a tailspin, the CSI 300 benchmark for onshore shares ended Monday down just a half a percent. A sharp rebound in the afternoon session pointed to active dip buying by investors. U.S.-listed Chinese stocks are also on track to recoup some lost ground, with the exchange-traded Crane Share CSI China Internet ETF rising 3.8% in pre-market trading. The ETF had declined 7.1% on Friday amid the tariffs, so you can see that 50% recovery there. These moves suggest investors see renewed tensions as strategic posturing by both parties to gain leverage ahead of an eventual deal. It's a lesson learned during the April turmoil when a historic rout was followed by a sustained bull run. Also keeping investors sanguine were signals from the Trump administration over the weekend that it's open to talks with Beijing. And of course, that's the optimistic appraisal. Meanwhile, we've got this one also in Bloomberg saying Trump and Xi trigger another standoff with world economy at risk. U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping's latest tit-for-tat showdown reached a standoff on Monday, with both countries claiming the ball was now in the other's court. After Trump signaled openness to doing a deal with Beijing, U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance on Sunday declared the outcome would depend on how the Chinese respond. Hours later, Chinese Foreign Ministry made clear Beijing would take its cues from Washington next steps after having already unleashed what it saw as retaliatory actions. If the U.S. continues on its wrong course, China will firmly take necessary measures to safeguard its legitimate rights and interests. They will firmly take measures. These are no flaccid measures they're taking. They're very firm. Foreign Ministry spokesman Lin Zhen said this at the briefing in Beijing. Chinese authorities haven't yet retaliated to Trump's threat to impose 100% tariff over their latest rare earth curbs, with the levies not formally written into policy. So, you know, we're back to another threats and 90-day deadlines, and oh, by this day we have to have a deal, and then we punt again back and forth. The market is betting that it's all talk. Maybe it is, but maybe it isn't, because the Dutch certainly aren't playing games. Check out this story. Dutch government takes control of Chinese-owned chipmaker Nexperia in a highly exceptional move. The Dutch government has invoked control of Nexperia, a Chinese-owned semiconductor maker based in the Netherlands, under its Goods Availability Act. The Dutch government has taken control of Nexperia, a Chinese-owned semiconductor based in the Netherlands, in an extraordinary move to ensure a sufficient supply of its chips remains available in Europe amid rising global tensions. Nexperia, a subsidiary of China's Wingtech Technology, specializes in high-volume production of chips used in automotive, consumer electronics, and other industries, making it vital for maintaining Europe's technological supply chains. The Netherlands move comes after Beijing tightened its restrictions on the export of rare earth elements and magnets on Thursday, which could impact Europe's automotive industry. The move could also further strain trade relations between China and the Netherlands following years of restrictions on Dutch company ASML's exports of advanced semiconductor manufacturing equipment in China. So the Dutch are opening up a new front in the trade war. Now, I couldn't help but notice this one. We just had an alert. I have not seen this article until just now. It looks like we've got another circular deal coming from Broadcom here, or from the OpenAI bubble. Broadcom stock soars 10% on OpenAI custom chip deal, adding to NVIDIA and AMD agreements. Where is OpenAI getting the money for any of this crap? Oh, they're getting it from NVIDIA. Where's NVIDIA getting the money? They're getting it from OpenAI. Where's OpenAI getting the money? They're getting it from NVIDIA. You see how this goes around and around? Man, this is exhausting. But hey, this is breaking news. Weeks after Broadcom stock shot up on the disclosure of a $10 billion customer that analysts said was OpenAI, the two companies have made the partnership official. OpenAI and Broadcom said Monday that they're jointly building and deploying 10 gigawatts of custom artificial intelligence accelerators as part of the broader effort across the industry to scale AI infrastructure. All right, 10 gigawatts of more data centers paid for by money OpenAI does not have, powered by electricity that the grid cannot supply. The AI bubble continues, round and round we go. Everybody knows this is fake, right? I mean, at this point, everybody knows this is fake. There, some people are still pretending, but if everybody knows it's fake, how much longer can it go on? Hey, good luck. Good luck if you're holding this garbage. But you've done pretty well if you are holding this garbage. Meanwhile, China Vanka's chairman has abruptly resigned from stressed builder. This guy wasn't even on the job for a year. China Vanka's recently appointed chairman has resigned from the role in another blow to the embattled developer facing liquidity challenges. Oh, boy, here we go with the names again. Jin Ji, or Jimin Jimon, remember that one? Who stepped in the chairman role amid an abrupt management overhaul in January, has applied to resign from positions, including the chairman. The developer said in an exchange filing to the Hong Kong Stock Exchange on Monday, Jin's resignation is due to personal reasons, according to the filing. Yeah, okay, personal reasons. This January, Jin took over as Vanka's chairman from Liu Liang, amid the firm's steepening losses. Once China's largest developer, the company has become the latest flashpoint in the nation's prolonged property crisis, underscoring the severity of the sector's challenges. Vanka reported a loss of 11.95 billion yuan, that's about $1.67 billion, in the first half, widening from a year earlier. Fitch Ratings also downgraded its long-term issuer score to CCC negative in August, reflecting further weakening in China Vanka's liquidity. That's the thing, guys. This China real estate collapse, it's been going on for years, but look, the losses at Vanka are still getting worse year over year. They're still losing money, and they're losing money at an ever-accelerating rate. This thing is not over. It's highly likely that Vanka will still incur losses this year, said Morningstar's Zhang. We think the high debt ratio will continue for several more years. This year, Shenzhen Metro offered multiple loans totaling about 23.9 billion yuan, according to Vanka's interim report. The loans are all earmarked to help Vanka repay the principal and interest on publicly issued bonds. In September, Vanka said it would secure another loan of as much as $2.06 billion yuan from Shenzhen Metro. By the way, Shenzhen Metro, that is a state-owned enterprise. So this is the government of China bailing out Vanka, essentially nationalizing the company. Vanka's strong relationship with the state and asset disposals might be key in addressing its funding gap, said Bloomberg intelligence analyst Daniel Fan and Hui Yantai in a recent report. In other words, bailout. Bailout for Vanka. All right, back across the pond to Europe now. Trump says he may warn Putin, U.S., to mull tomahawks for Ukraine. This is a big deal. This would be an escalation by the U.S. and Ukraine. Well, I don't think Ukraine, they've been invaded. Once you've been invaded, you can't really escalate. But this would be an escalation from us if we were to give long-range tomahawks to the Ukrainians. And you better believe the Russians are going to take that threat seriously. President Donald Trump said he'd consider arming Ukraine with long-range tomahawk missiles that would allow strikes deeper into Russia, but said he may first talk to Russian President Vladimir Putin about it in a bid to end the war. Trump said that he discussed the powerful weapons when he spoke with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky over the weekend. We talked about that, and so we'll see, Trump told reporters Sunday on Air Force One as he flew to the Middle East to champion his peace deal there. He said he might use the Tomahawk sale as leverage with Putin to end the war. I might say, look, if the war is not going to get settled, I may send them tomahawks. Trump's comments signal an openness to expanding the range of weaponry provided to Ukraine, but also that he remains focused on a ceasefire. If the war is not settled, then we may very well do it. We may not, but we may do it, he said. That is some typical wishy-washy Trumpian language there. But guys, the Tomahawk missile is far more accurate, far more long range, and packs a much bigger punch than the drones that the Ukrainians have been using to attack Russia's oil infrastructure over these last few months. And even those drone attacks have been devastating to Russia's economy. Case in point, this one, Russia's seaborne fuel exports sank 17% in September after drone attacks. Russia's seaborne oil products exports fell 17.1% in September from August to 7.58 million metric tons due to less fuel production as various refineries were impacted by drone attacks, data from industry sources and Reuters calculations showed. Several refineries were attacked by drones in August and September, including the names of all these refineries that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. Case in point, guys. Even though the Russians are getting their own punches in, right? They've captured territory, vast swaths of Ukraine. They've devastated Ukraine's infrastructure. But Ukraine is also hitting back. And these drone attacks have been devastating to Russia's oil economy, which they need to continue to finance their war. Now, if the Ukrainians are given Tomahawks, they'll be able to reach even further into Russia, hitting even more refineries even harder, which would hurt their economy even more. And look, the U.S. is eager to test some of these new ground-launched Tomahawk platforms that we've got in service because we want the Marines to be able to use those in the Pacific if we ever light things off in the South China Sea with the Chinese. We want to be able to launch the JASMs and the LRASMs, which are the modern Tomahawks and the anti-ship variant that are set to replace the Tomahawks. So we take the money, we sell these missiles to the Ukrainians. We'd use that money to buy the modern versions. We test the platforms in Ukraine, refine them for use against the Chinese. I mean, this is all, the world is shifting to a wartime footing here, guys, a wartime economy. We've seen it with these rare earth nationalizations, with the government taking a stake in Intel and U.S. Steel. It's all in preparation for World War III. You better believe the Russians are going to take that threat of Tomahawks seriously. Although, will it be enough to get Putin to blink? Probably not. I mean, Putin is not somebody I would want to play poker with ever. Meanwhile, auditor BDO cuts jobs with a focus on managing Apollo debt. This is an interesting story because of BDO. Auditing firm BDO has slashed costs as it managed an expensive debt agreement with Apollo Global Management that it took on to fund employee stock ownership plan. So BDO, this is an auditor, mind you. These are the guys who make sure people's books are in order. They borrowed money to pay for giving stock to their employees. Okay, let's overlook all of that. BDO has laid off dozens of employees who were supposed to be the ones getting the stock. Now they're getting laid off instead. All right. In recent months and halted non-essential travel earlier this year, according to people familiar with the situation who asked not to be identified discussing private matters. The cuts, driven in part by the high interest costs of the debt, have affected business lines, including audit, tax, and advisory, one of the people said. The belt tightening comes as one of BDO's clients, the now bankrupt First Brands Group, contends with angry creditors over its use of off-balance sheet financing. The auto parts supplier was among BDO's largest clients, some of the people said. In a statement, BDO said it doesn't comment on its clients. Now, why am I making such a big deal out of this one? First of all, First Brands and the contagion risk from First Brands, that is a very big deal. I've been talking about that with my friend Melody Wright and with Lox Ganapathy over on Melody's channel. But the other thing, BDO, they were the auditor. BDO was the group that signed off on the books for First Brands. That's interesting because BDO is also the auditor who signed off on Super Microcomputer's books at the last minute in order for them to avoid being delisted by the NASDAQ. And they also signed off on the books while continuing to flag irregularities and material weaknesses and internal controls over financial reporting. That's the same auditor who signed off on the now defunct First Brands paging Mr. Anderson, Mr. Arthur Anderson. You have a telephone call at the front desk. And meanwhile, we've got a ruction in the junk bond market. This one started on Friday. U.S. junk bonds post worst losses in 6 months as spreads widen. The U.S. junk bond rally came to a halt on Friday with the biggest one-day loss in 6 months as the risk premium surged to a near four-month peak of 304 basis points. Yields climbed to 6.99%, the highest in more than 2 months. The losses accelerated after President Trump threatened to impose huge tariffs on imports from China and said he saw no reason to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping, causing concerns about trade relations between the world's two biggest economies. Now, guys, this is kind of important here because there's a lot of complacency in the bond market. You're talking about how spreads were very narrow and then they suddenly widened on Friday. When you hear narrow spreads, that means the interest rate on junk bonds, risky bonds, is not much higher than the interest rate on riskless bonds like U.S. Treasuries. That spread reflects how much premium people are being paid for taking risk. So when that spread gets tight, it means people are overpaying for too much risk. And then all of a sudden on Friday with the tariff threat, big losses pile up in junk bonds. Now that's also important because of this story in Bloomberg. From Tricolor to Saks, bonds are now crashing at breakneck speed. Recent meltdowns in the bond and loan markets have investors on edge, sparking a hunt for hidden risks inside portfolios. This is the search for fallout from Tricolor, from First Brands, from Saks. These are not these isolated cases, right? Boy, there sure seems to be a lot of isolated instances going on out there right now. It is by almost any measure a golden era for U.S. credit markets. Companies are selling debt at a near record clip. Relative borrowing costs are hovering around historic lows, and investors are pocketing the best returns in years. But in recent months, a flurry of meltdowns, each of which inflicted losses of more than 60% on investors, has exposed cracks in that edifice. I think that edifice is more of an orifice, if you ask me, but I digress. It began back in the spring with the luxury retailer Saks. Things went bad so fast, it restructured its bonds after making just a single interest payment. Days later, another bond, this one from natural gas company New Fortress Energy, crashed too. Then a subprime auto lender, Tricolor Holdings, filed suddenly for bankruptcy, triggering a near total wipeout on some debt. That, in turn, was followed by the collapse of an auto parts supplier, First Brands Group. The implosions in some ways are very different. The types of debt sold, the immediate cause of the debacle, and this led many to dismiss them initially as merely one-offs. When you have six one-offs in a row, they're not one-offs. All right? Is it six one-offs or is it one six-off? You see where I'm going? It's a lot of isolated occasions here. And yet, the breakneck speed at which all of them happened is so unusual that a nagging worry is beginning to grow louder on Wall Street. What if these kinds of collapses, capable of taking bonds from par to cents on the dollar in a matter of days or weeks, are not an aberration after all? What if they represent the new normal in the go-go market that's so frothy it chooses to assume, almost without exception, almost regardless of the risk involved, that everything will work out fine? They're talking about that complacency in the bond market. Oh, everything will be fine. These recent blowups, says Jason Mudrick, who runs Mudrick Capital, a distressed debt hedge fund, could be the canary in the coal mine. The fear isn't that a crisis is brewing, at least not as long as the economy continues to grind along. No, it's more that investors have been lulled into a complacency that made it feel okay to accept corporate bond yields that are barely above treasury rates and to sign away long-held creditor rights just for a chance to finance a new AI data center or the latest leverage buyout. What's the worst thing that could happen? Suffer a quick 60% loss, however, and that sub 6% yield the bond had been paying, as some Tricolors did, looks woefully inadequate. Take a few hits like that and it can wreck a portfolio, ruin a career, and eventually trigger a broader recalibration of risk throughout credit markets. Some investors acknowledge in private that they've already begun to closely examine the bonds and loans in their portfolios for signs of trouble that they may have been overlooked. Mudrick says the excess is built up in the markets over many years, the result of near zero benchmark rates and steady growth that spurred too much corporate borrowing and encouraged aggressive risk-taking by lenders. We're now starting to see this topple over into extreme scenarios. Wall Street shouldn't have been financing this company, speaking about First Brands, said Anton Posner, chief executive officer of Mercury Resources, a supply chain logistics company, and a board member of the America's chapter of the International Trade and Forfeiting Association, which serves as the trade finance community. They didn't dive into enough due diligence, and they didn't even know its business models. Talk about complacency, guys. People have no idea what they're buying. They have no idea the risk they're taking on, and they're paying way too much for it. There are arguably a great many credits which ought to be insolvent, but which have been kept in business by the combination of covenant relaxation and abundant ongoing liquidity, said Matt King, global market strategist and founder of Satori Insights. It's just a question of how long they take to be discovered. As always, guys, that is why I warn you, be careful of what is in your portfolio. They are trying to dump all of this crap into 401ks before it goes kablooey. And I just want to say thank you very much to Dan Hedin, who says to infinity and beyond, but if it does, stock up on the three B's, beans, brass, and Band-Aids. Hey, I like that. The beans, all right, you got to get a little calories, get your protein, the brass. I like the pew-pews myself, and Band-Aids. Don't forget medical supplies, an often overlooked prepper category. Very good point there. And, of course, guys, manage your storage and your expiration dates as well. Thank you very much, Dan. I agree to infinity and beyond. For the Shinies, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Armando Reyes says, did anyone hear about Konstantin, the Ukrainian crypto influencer who retired himself permanently? I've heard a couple of stories like this. I mean, guys, there was some like, it was outright like lost porn was going around this weekend after what happened in crypto. By the way, another plug for my video on crypto winner that I did yesterday. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, look, do you ever hear the expression bankers jumping or make bankers jump again? Whenever you get these big sudden drops in markets, this happens. People's lives and careers get ruined. And unfortunately, some people are driven to extreme measures. It's sad, but it happens. And unfortunately, I think we're going to see a lot more of it in the future. Yes, I didn't hear about that specific case, but I heard several anecdotes along those lines, Armando. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Noah Lemasters. Thank you, Noah, for supporting the channel. Been a melonhead for a month. He says, have you seen Voidzilla's new video about corruption? No, I haven't. But Voidzilla, that's CoffeeZilla's other channel. Let me just say, I am a huge fan of CoffeeZilla and Voidzilla. That's like channel bucket list right there, is to one day collaborate with him on something, anything, because I love the work that he does. I haven't seen the latest video about corruption, but I rarely miss one of his. So Noah, I'm going to go check that out just as soon as I'm done a couple of things I got to do this morning. But let me just say, I really like that channel and I highly recommend Voidzilla and CoffeeZilla. Thank you, Noah, for supporting the channel. Chuck G says, apparently some crypto bros have been unaliving themselves over the crypto crash this weekend. It happens with stocks, it happens with bonds, and it happens with crypto. It's just, they tend to be younger with crypto. I saw a lot of stories about people saying, I'm ruined. I think half of the I lost everything posts that you saw on Twitter over the weekend were probably fake, like people just being sarcastic. But I think some of them were probably real. And it is sad, unfortunately. Guys, it's only money. It might be a lot of money, but at the end of the day, you can bounce back from this. Thank you, Charles, for supporting the channel. And Charles is back again. He says, also, I sent you a video on Twitter about how gas hasn't blown up yet due to American shale, but apparently shale is going under, so gas goes up soon. So shale, I don't know that going under, that might be extreme. We are seeing layoffs in the oil patch, like in Texas, ConocoPhillips announced layoffs. At the same time, I got a message from a guy over the weekend who does chemical deliveries in the oil patch. He's Southern Canada, I believe, was the region he works in. He is still running like ripping around the clock. So there are signs of a slowdown in shale. There are also other parts of shale where things are still humming along. I can tell you prices are pretty low right now, and shale tends to be the more expensive to produce. That's your marginal supply. So if higher prices don't materialize, shale is operating at a loss in some cases. Those, you know, more expensive operations will be forced to shut down. So yes, that blow up hasn't happened yet. There are some signs of it in some places, but it hasn't gone mainstream just yet. Keep an eye on OPEC. If they keep opening up the valves, pumping more and more, if worries of a supply glut become more and more problematic, then yes, we will see a blow up in shale. Absolutely. Thank you, Charles, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says, Ukes buying missiles from U.S. with U.S. money, AI financing. Actually, I think they're buying it with minerals. Remember the minerals deal earlier this year, Pasta Man, when they said, you know, basically, we're not just going to give you this stuff anymore. We want something in exchange. We're getting mineral rights in Ukraine. That's what we're getting in exchange for these missiles. And then I guess we're somehow using balance sheet gimmicks to say, okay, therefore we have money, and then we can use that money to go pay for missiles and other things. There's some sketchy financing going on there for sure, but I think it's most likely has to do with stakes in Ukrainian missile mineral deposits. Also, a lot of this money is being paid for by the Europeans. We have seen a lot of that since that blow up in the Oval Office between Trump and Vance, and then the Europeans got rid of their debt breaks and constitutional limits on money borrowing, and they're going to spin up the money printer soon enough. So I think it's a combination of Europeans buying for the Ukrainians and Ukrainians paying in mineral deposits. But I would add that Ukrainians paying in mineral deposits, that payment is contingent upon the Ukrainian government surviving the war. That's important. That payment will not materialize if the Ukrainian government collapses. So that means the United States now has a vested financial interest in the Zelensky government surviving. It's worth pointing out. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel, sir. And Chris Bott, thank you for supporting the channel. He says, sold some SLB and GLD calls, and we'll be taking the profits to hire Janet Yellen to read me bedtime stories. Janet Yellen. What do you want to hear? Good night, moon. Rub-a-dub-dub, three men in a tub. All of them are strong and resilient like our banking system. Congratulations on your profits in SLV and GLD calls. My God, we're going to give these kids freaking nightmares, aren't we? I'm just waiting for my daughter to wake up screaming and tell me, Dad, there's a yelling in my closet. Please do something. I'll pull a Major Payne. If she in there, she ain't happy. Who knows? Who's seen that movie? Thank you, Chris Bott. I got a kick out of that one. Tom Dillon says, watch the video yesterday about round tripping that stated OpenAI spends $2.60 for every $1 of revenue. That is accurate based on 2024 losses, which are going to get worse in 2025. They're taking a flamethrower to cash, but circular Jenga tower of grift keeps rising. Tom, first of all, let me just say how awesome it is that people doing videos about round tripping 2 years after I did videos about round tripping are getting 20 times as many views on their round tripping videos as I got. I think that's just freaking awesome. Thanks, YouTube. Thanks, algorithm. But I digress. yeah, they're losing money. At the end of the day, my complaint this whole time, besides the circular accounting, besides the scumbag reputations of most of the players in this AI bubble, and reputations are supposed to matter. Apparently they don't. They don't make any money. Underlying the foundation of this whole bubble are companies that all lose money. And therefore, without an endless supply of new money to burn, this whole house of cards comes down. And they're having to get more and more creative, more and more scummy with their financing deals in order to keep that foundation secure. And now we all know it's built on quicksand. We all know it now. So when does it collapse? Are we all going to stay in that house until it collapses? Or are we just going to like slowly move to the exits, but not so fast that we spook everybody else and start to stampede for the exits that actually brings the house down? I think a lot of people are very quietly backing out of those positions right now. CoreWeave, insiders selling every single day along with Magnetar Capital. Yeah, people are selling already. Abso-freaking-lutely, Tom Dillon. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. I appreciate the generosity. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out, and then maybe my round-tripping videos won't get 1/20th of the views they get on similar channels. Yeah, I just throw it out there. Hey, thanks also for the super chats and for the support of the channel. I appreciate that, guys, as well as you magnanimous melon heads on YouTube and Patreon. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.